With that note, we will now begin our first case of the morning, United States against Townsend. It's a 15-minute per side argument. Counsel for the defense.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Anthony Ream, and I represent the appellant, Master at Arms, Second Class Petty Officer Lapree Townsend, United States Navy. With this court's permission, I'd like to respectfully request 3 minutes of time for rebuttal.
Your motion's granted.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appellant would like to simply highlight four concerns in the record that, when viewed under the totality of the circumstances, the military judge should have struck the member due to implied bias. The first concern, reflecting the record, is that the member had a close relationship with his father. His father was a police officer, and he indicated that he had a healthy respect for law enforcement. The second concern is the fact that his career goal was to be a prosecutor. When he was asked why, he replied that he was the son of a cop. He viewed it as a continuation of what he's done for the Navy, and that he, quote-unquote, liked putting the bad guys in jail. The third concern is that when he compared, and perhaps the most troubling, is when he compared a cop, the testimony of a cop, with a good record, to another witness with no further corroboration or knowledge, the member indicated that he would, quote, cut a little bit the other way towards the police officer, end quote. And finally, he indicated that he disliked defense lawyers. He actually indicated this on the record. He said he liked military defense counsels, but however, he did qualify this by saying that we're all officers in the same service. He also stated he had lesser of a respect for civilian defense counsels. And then I believe one of the lawyers asked him, like law and order? And he replied, yes, like law and order. Your Honor, when these four concerns are raised...
So you're not concerned about the law school part? Did you mention the law school part in your four?
No, I did not, Your Honor. I mean, the fact that he was also attending law school... Oh, yes.
I mean, in your brief, I'm just asking you to complete your list or not, and I just want to focus on the factors that you're identifying.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, the fact
Duncan,
that...
Duncan, the law school part...
When his career goal was to be a prosecutor, and then he was currently attending law school to become a prosecutor.
Period.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. That's the sum total of your concern about that.
No, the fact that he was...
There's no correct answer.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, the fact that he was actually continuing to study law while this trial was going on was an issue that was not granted before.
And the government, in its brief, was concerned about the possibility that the appellant was presenting or advocating for some sort of a per se test.
Yes, Your Honor.
Involving parents in law enforcement or people who respect their parents, that kind of thing.
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you promoting a per se test here or not?
No, Your Honor. In fact, we're promoting just the opposite. It's very clear under this court's case law in the United States versus Strand that this case is viewed under the totality of the circumstances. This court has never, when it's granted relief, established a per se rule. In fact, the government, on page 10 of their brief, cites Hollings, United States versus Hollings, for that authority, and they cite the lower court's decision. However, it's a little confusing because United States versus Hollings actually didn't even deal with implied bias. It rather dealt with a disqualification pursuant to RCM 912, which is the legal officer exclusion. So it's a little unclear as to why the government is arguing that a per se, if relief was to be granted in this case, a per se rule would have to be established.
What is your view as to whether the potential member or the member was adequately rehabilitated, at least with respect to actual bias regarding each of the matters you've raised?
Well, with respect to actual bias, he was rehabilitated. However, frankly, if there's every time there's implied bias, excuse me, every time there's actual bias, there will be implied bias. But you can have implied bias without actual bias. So essentially, there's no really need to even litigate an actual bias case, because every time there's an actual bias, there would be an implied bias as well.
Then why, if there was successful rehabilitation on the actual bias and looking at all the factors, why doesn't that not cut against you on implied bias?
Because in this court has adopted, this court has stated in United States versus Moreno that despite a disclaimer of bias, most people in the same position as the court member would be prejudiced. If we take a look at the rehabilitation efforts of the government, he essentially asked him, are you able to follow orders? I would submit to this court that probably 99.99% of all military personnel are going to answer that in the affirmative, yes, sir, I will follow orders. However, this court has never held implied bystander to such a strict standard. Instead, this court, again, has said, despite a disclaimer of bias, would most people in the same position of this court member be prejudiced? I believe they would. It's very clear that his father was a very influential person in his life. It's very clear that he was he had quite a demonstrated bias towards the government. These are his initial answers before rehabilitative efforts took effect. Military judges are enjoined to grant defense challenges for cause liberally.
What's the standard of review here?
Well, the standard of review is, this court has stated that the standard of review is less deferential than abuse of discretion, but more deferential than de novo.
Does, you know, you have a wishy-washy area between de novo and abuse of discretion. Does where this case falls within that wishy-washy area depend on whether the judge mouths the magic words, liberal grant?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe it does.
How so?
I believe in the United States versus Downing, this court has held that this court will not presume the military judge has applied the implied bias analysis absent any reflection on the record. In Downing, in fact, the facts of Downing, the trial defense counsel in Downing actually raised an issue of implied bias. This court held, per se, that I believe the exact language, paraphrasing language, is that this court didn't expect a record dissertation on the subject, but just simply some indication that there was an implied bias analysis done in this case.
Well, does saying liberal grant equate to doing the analysis?
Appellate argues no, it's not. Appellate argues that you'd have to say, I hereby ran through the liberal grant analysis for the defense challenges for cause. Now, appellate does concede that the military judge used the liberal grant mandate for the government challenges for cause. However, this is illegal. And according to this court's holding in the United States versus James, this court has clearly articulated the fact that with incorporation of Article 25 UCMJ, the liberal grant mandate was only meant to apply the defense challenges for cause. Therefore, I would, as a fact, argue that the military judge, because he didn't remain silent on the record, this court has held that when the military judge remains silent on the record, the standard review is more deferential than de novo, or less deferential than abuse of discretion. However, when we actually have it on the record that the military judge created the wrong analysis, I mean, I think there should be no deference afforded to the military judge. Now, admittedly, Hollins was, United States versus James occurred a year after this court martial was in place. However, the law at that time never said that the government was entitled to a liberal grant mandate. The law at that time never indicated that the military judge was correct. And frankly, I'm sure the military judge didn't intend to create error, but what do we
they
have?
Usually don't.
Yes, Your Honor. But what do we have in this case? We have, if I simply stated the proposition that the military judge flipped the analysis, that he held the government challenges for cause to a liberal grant standard, and he held the defense challenges for cause to an actual bias standard, there is nothing in the record that would contradict that proposition.
What about any of the four factors that you listed would make a member of the public think that the appellant in this case received an unfair trial?
Yes, Your Honor. I think in combination and together, they would. My biggest concern was the fact that he would compare the testimony of a cop higher than the testimony of another witness.
Did a policeman testify in the case?
Five of them did, sir.
Five of them did.
Five special agents testified in this case, and that's not including the master at arms that invoked his Fifth Amendment right, and various civilian employees within the Naval Criminal Investigation Service that testified for forensics purposes. This was a case that whose witnesses were actually cop-heavy. There's actually many police officers called to testify. And what's more important is the fact that in order to lay the foundation, the trial counsel had to go through their resume to establish that they were qualified to speak on the matter, which essentially reinforced in this member's initial impression the fact that these were cops with generally a good record.
Do you think that most members of the public, if it was a close call, would tend to believe a police officer over a lay witness? Because, I mean, I would think that that statement by this particular potential juror is not really that unusual.
Perhaps, Your Honor. I mean, to be honest, I have known certain sects of society that would not hold the testimony of a cop above other witnesses. In fact, I would know that that, again, is it would be a case-by-case basis. And again, Your Honor, I think an additional concern is the fact that he didn't like defense lawyers.
Well, he I think he qualified that in a way that was actually good. I mean, I think that he was completely rehabilitated on that point, don't you?
No, no. In fact,
fairness.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that he had to be rehabilitated, but I think that this court, when it's analyzing implied bias, it states that despite a disclaimer of bias. Your Honor,
let me ask you again. Do you think that the average member of the public, again, would similarly say, you know, I don't think much of the defense counsel that you see on TV? The ones that are on Law and Order.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, they're not usually portrayed in a very good light, are they?
They're portrayed within their ethical duty, but yes, I believe they're not. I mean, that's a very difficult question to answer. I mean, there's fictional shows such as The Practice, which I believe went out there, where defense lawyers are portrayed in a much more righteous light. So that's a very, I apologize, Your Honor, that's a very...
It's okay, I don't watch TV, so I'm speculating myself.
Well, counsel, how about, let's watch the record here. He said he didn't like defense counsel, but your brief doesn't cite any support for that proposition, and I can't find anything in the record where he said he didn't like defense counsel. Your brief cites to page 230, where he's getting a question from from the assistant defense counsel, and he says there, I have lesser respect for some of the ones you see on TV out in the civilian world. That doesn't sound to me like he's saying, I don't like civilian defense counsel.
And I believe, again, this might be a contextual answer, but I believe the next line he says, like the ones you see on Law and Order, and then those last ones are yes.
I don't believe he said that. I think the record said that the defense counsel said that.
Yes, Your Honor, but he agreed with that statement.
But he says, I have a mixed view, whatever a mixed view is.
Yes, Your Honor. But the fact is that...
Doesn't he say, some of the ones you see on TV? Where in the record does he say, I don't like civilian defense counsel?
I see my time has expired.
You can answer that question.
Thank you, Your Honor. He never says specifically, I don't like defense counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for the government.
Your Honors, and may I please the Court, my name is Major Brian Keller. I represent the government along with Carl Lewis Pruitt. There's one issue in this case, and that is whether appellant failed to meet his burden to establish that the public would perceive his trial as unfair, or that most people in Lieutenant Branson's position would be biased. Appellant failed to meet that burden, and thus the magistrate judge did not abuse his discretion in denying appellant's challenge for cause. Appellant's constitutional and regulatory right was...
Is that standard review?
It is, Your Honor. Well, it is a wishy-washy standard of review. As far back as 93, or as late as 93, it was a clear abuse of discretion standard. It became an abuse of discretion afterwards. It seems to the government that has gone back and forth. But it is possibly an abuse of discretion and something less than that, and something more than de novo, I think, is the current state of the law. So less than abuse of discretion, but more than de novo.
Well, that's clear.
Yes, Your Honor. At some point, it was a clear abuse of discretion. But nevertheless, in the current state of the law, the judge did not abuse his discretion.
Discretion. What's the definition of an abuse of discretion? Something that's clearly erroneous. So a clear abuse of discretion is something that's clearly. And
yes,
makes a lot of sense, too, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I think maybe one spin
that's not the point. What's your argument?
Yes, Your Honor. I think one spin is de novo with regard to the law and clearly erroneous with regard to the facts. The implied bias standard is an objective standard. What does a military judge have to do when he's confronted with implied bias? Nothing. And Downing 2002 and Hollins 2007, they support that proposition. I think appellant's spin on Hollins is incorrect. In that case, they did address implied bias, and they found in the final paragraph, I believe, that the military judge acted within his discretion in denying the challenge for cause, which might suggest that it's an abuse of discretion and not less than abuse of discretion standard. But again, the grounds were not implied bias that he announced. On the other side of that is, of course, that if there's only one challenge, and that is a challenge for cause, and implied and actual bias are subsumed within the challenge for cause. So if it's just one challenge, I'm not sure how it could be two different standards. But in the Hollins and Downing, in both cases, they said failure to address implied bias in the record did not mean that the military judge received no deference. So at least some deference in this case. I think supporting that is that some of the factors that go towards actual bias also go towards implied bias. Of course, one of those is the disclaimer on the record that there's no bias, which is, of course, not dispositive, but it's a factor to consider. Now, the military judge addressed on the record some concepts that go directly to implied bias. One of those, in his ruling on 321, page 321, he said, the fact that he was in law school and the fact that he's a prosecutor is not in itself a basis for challenge. Now, per se, obviously, implies something that's a legal requirement. There's some kind of per se requirement that the person be not fit to serve on the panel, which is exactly what implied bias, of course, addresses, and the eyes of the public.
Should we take account of the fact that the defense counsel in this case, specifically himself, on page 319, argued that if he didn't grant the challenge in this case, an appearance of impropriety would exist? I mean, isn't that another language, another word, another group of words for implied bias?
Yes, Your Honor. Again, there's only one challenge, and that's a challenge for cause, and both are subsumed within that, so the judge is looking at both. I believe that, I think Hollins and Downing support the fact that you don't have to put on the record exactly what you're considering. So he raises it, he's making a challenge for cause. I think when the judge then addresses the fact that being a prosecutor is not per se grounds to exclude him, being a lawyer is not per se.
He wants to be a prosecutor.
Yes, Your Honor. That he wants to be a prosecutor, so he's not even a prosecutor yet. And that goes to Justice O'Connor's...
Surely the government isn't arguing that it would be a good idea to have a prosecutor on the panel.
No, Your Honor. That goes to Justice O'Connor's concurring opinion in the Smith case, which I think lists factors. And I say, of course, being a prosecutor would be something that would exclude you per se. And the government will come back to that if it has time. This court in Glaze, or the Court of Military Appeals, of course, has said that lawyers are not per se excluded. The Supreme Court Smith case has said that people who want to work in district attorney's offices, they refuse to apply the implied bias in that case. At least the dissent and the concurring opinion support that reading of the majority opinion, even though appellant disagrees with it. And certainly he understood the liberal grant mandate because he cited to it on the record. Now, appellant, of course, admits that Judge Rolfe's decision or ruling was made a year before I think the James case, which said that the implied bias has to apply to the defense only and not to the government. But again, it's not a watershed rule. This is not a case. And I believe the watershed rule says that it's for procedural rules, it's got to be a procedural rule that affects the fundamental fairness or accuracy of the proceedings. Now, applying the implied bias, the liberal grant mandate to the government would probably make it a more accurate proceeding. So then not applying that to the government might make the results skew more towards appellant, but certainly it's not going to make it it would make it more accurate to have the liberal grant mandate applied to the government, in other words. But this court decided not to apply it to the government, and it's not a watershed rule.
140, that's been decided, hasn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, but again, Judge Rolfe's decision.
Convening authority picks the members, doesn't he?
Uh-huh. The government has no disagreement with the ruling in James, but again, it's not a watershed rule. It's the only point the government's making. What remains after the two factors that Judge Rolfe did address in the record, the prosecutor and the lawyer, the want to be a prosecutor and the law student factors, is, of course, appellant's argument that his family relationship with his father would have caused some kind of bias. And that his view that police officers with good records would lend to their credibility, and his suggestion that his beliefs were hardened, I think he uses that twice in his brief, with regard to criminal law. His father being a police officer, Minyard, I think, supports that that's not disqualifying. Spouses and police officers are not per se disqualified.
Putting aside the application in this case, is it the government's view, or does it is not... one purpose of the doctrine of implied bias in the liberal grant mandate to remove just this sort of issue so that you're not dealing 5 years later with debates over which way the judge should have broken on putting, for the sake of argument, a close case. Now, I'm saying this is, I'm not talking about your case yet.
Yes, sir.
But does the government take issue that is what the liberal grant mandate is partly about? Are you fighting the liberal grant mandate or the implied bias, or are you just arguing facts here today?
We're not fighting the liberal grant mandate, Your Honor. We are fighting the facts.
In theory, it makes sense, right? If you got a close call, why have it debated on appeal and 5 years after the fact do the whole thing over again?
Put your reasoning on the record and that hopefully resolves the issue. Yes, Your Honor.
Remove the issue by erring on the side of caution.
Yes, Your Honor. And of course,
that's a valid concept, is it, in the government's view?
I think that Judge Baker wrote Clay, and that was the language in Clay.
I'm asking if you're taking issue with that or not.
No, absolutely not.
Right. Is this a backhanded way to get at that, or are you just arguing facts now?
No, the government is arguing facts. But the government thinks that lawyers are not per se disqualified, or people who want to be lawyers are not per se disqualified. People who want to be prosecutors are not per se disqualified. And then the remaining factors that appellant lists, I guess he's trying to argue there's some kind of cumulative disqualification because these all go together. And the government's response to that argument would be certainly there are some cases where you could have two factors that go together that would make, I guess, I think the Caldwell case, 1974, which the government cites, the D.C. Circuit, they say there's a unique similarity between the member's experience in this case. If there were, in this case, for instance, if the member's father had been gunned down by somebody in a revenge attack because his father had treated women badly, that would be unique circumstances. If you had two factors that went together, that would probably be implied bias, or that could likely be implied bias, and serve to exclude the member, whereas there could be 20 factors that are similarities between the member and the appellant's case, and they're not implied bias. I think in this case, it's a stretch to use, or the government's supposition is, in this case, it's a stretch to use the word, his opinion was hardened because of his discussions with his father, that it was hardened, I believe, because of his criminal law classes.
The defense argument, and they'll make their own argument, but it appears to be that he's in effect a law enforcement officer. That is, he comes from a law enforcement background. He wants to be a prosecutor, and it's a case in which law enforcement officers are going to testify. Are law enforcement officers per se disqualified from serving on civilian juries or in the military on court-martial panels?
No, sir. That's Glaze from the Court of Military Appeals on 53, and the Salvato Court in the Seventh Circuit in 98 has more recently said that lawyers are not. I'm sorry, did you say lawyers or law enforcement?
Law enforcement.
That would be. If I could take a second, Your Honor.
That's okay. We can pursue that further.
Yeah, the New York case in 1997 supports the law enforcement, and the Parra case in 1971, I think also Mekas in 1970, law enforcement officers. In many of them, it was law enforcement officers and their spouses, but arguably the spouse might have a closer relationship than the son might have.
What about implied bias in a case in which law enforcement testimony is a crucial aspect of the prosecution's case?
Well, if it's a crucial aspect, again, it goes to, the similarities, as the Caldwell case phrases, the similarities between that case and the member. I think in this case, we have a member who, on the record, regardless of how appellant is, I guess, phrasing how he testified, I think the government's position is that he testified that he was very fair-minded with regard to the NCIS agents, for example. The question was, would you automatically hold their testimony in higher regard simply because they're NCIS agents? And his response was that if they have the good record, then I would definitely give some credibility to their testimony. And that might give you a little bit towards getting credence toward their testimony. That's on page 224. The government doesn't see anywhere automatically believe an NCIS agent in that language. So I think that goes toward there are some factors that can contribute to if you've got relatives who are police officers and that makes you want to serve as a prosecutor at some point in the future when you're taking criminal law classes, maybe that would. But in this case, no, it doesn't because he's demonstrated on the record. Not that he's impartial, but that he is not directly, it's a disclaimer of impartiality, it's not a bold disclaimer, but he's saying, yeah, that would give some credibility to their testimony. He's not saying, as appellant is phrasing it, that it would give credibility to their testimony over other witnesses. The government just doesn't see that in the record. With regard to criminal law classes, the appellant defense counsel asked him if the military judge instructed him in the law of defense. If that differed from his knowledge or understanding, could he follow the military judge's instructions? Of course, he said yes. Most law students do take criminal law classes in law school, and probably many enjoy it, and maybe even some of them want to become prosecutors. That doesn't mean that they're per se excluded. That would probably exclude a lot of law students from serving on trials. I mean, it's also likely that now all law students who want to be prosecutors don't change their minds. They may change their minds later on about what they want to do. So it's clearly not, it's not clear that it should be implied bias in this case. As I think was asked before, the question about wanting to put bad guys away, that isn't true, is what the government's position is. Police officers certainly probably have that opinion. They're not per se excluded from trials. Prosecutors likely also have that position. People who want to become prosecutors also have that position. They shouldn't be excluded. Anyone can express that opinion. It's an inert statement, and that goes for a lot of what the member is testifying to here. They're inert statements. The way he phrases them, they're inert, but the way appellant is characterizing them, they have a cloud over them that seems to cast some kind of pall over the trial, but that's just not the case when the record is actually read.
Counsel, could you explain what you mean by inert statements in this context?
Yes, Your Honor. With regard to the NCIS testimony, appellant's characterization, I think, is that he's got a hardened attitude and he believes NCIS agents over other witnesses. I think it's page 224 of the record where he testifies about that, and that's not what the government sees in the record. What the government sees is that he says that I would definitely give them some credibility if they had a good record. And if they had a good record, that might give you a little bit towards giving credence. Maybe it's a lawyerly answer because he's been to law school, but it's a certainly reasoned answer and doesn't indicate any bias. The way an appellant reads it, it does indicate bias.
What about that might give you a little bit more cut to the other way if it was too close?
Yes, Your Honor, but that's, well, it's not a yes or no question. But the way he phrases that, it's not clear that he's answering. The question isn't, would you believe...
Distinguishing between law enforcement and NCIS.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Is that what you're saying? He's distinguishing between law enforcement officers and NCIS?
Well, the question wasn't, would you believe an NCIS agent over other witnesses? I don't believe. I think the question was, would you apply the judge's rulings... If I can check for
I'm taking you back to page 223, though, because I think that's I'm not taking issue with your argument. I just think you have to deal with the harder part of the record, not the easier part.
Yes, Your Honor.
Try the bottom of page 223. Of course, we all try and be objective when we sit here.
I think taking the context of the whole answer that he's got, the question is, would you automatically hold them in higher regard? Of course, he doesn't say against other witnesses. He says higher regard. Would I automatically hold the judge in higher regard? Maybe that's implied against other witnesses, but his response, taken as a whole, he's saying that if you had a gut decision to make, maybe they cut the other way if you had law enforcement, and he goes on and he says, yeah, it would give some credibility to the testimony. So I think taken as a whole, all he's saying is that yes, it would give some credibility to a testimony if they had a good record. But he's saying I could judge that fairly, and I could take all the factors into consideration.
Counsel, given plain meaning here, when the question from the trial counsel is higher regard, use of a word in its comparative sense of higher, is there any meaning other than comparing it to a witness who is not an NCIS agent?
Well, yes, but I think when he's defining it when he says, I think it would give him some credibility. He's defining what the question means to him when he says, I think it would give them some credibility if they had a good record. I think he's ending the question by saying, this is what that means to me, what you just asked. I think any time an answer is given like that, it's difficult sometimes for the members to answer. If I conclude quickly.
Yes, please take your time to conclude.
The Supreme Court and Smith and the case of Caldwell both provide Justice O'Connor's dissent in Smith, both provide useful tests for implied bias, and the government would ask this court to look to both of those tests, the one that Justice O'Connor begins with some examples might include, and the court in Caldwell, where they say unique similarity between the members' experience in this case, are both useful tests for clarifying and further defining what implied bias means should this court decide to go down that route. And the Supreme Court recognized in the separate society of the military I think the good order and discipline aspect of the military, which makes it different. There's nothing inconsistent with that second prong of implied bias that has been complained about in some concurring opinions, I believe, since 93 or so. So the government is is content with the implied bias test and thinks that Justice O'Connor's opinion is completely consistent with implied bias. I think that test helps further define implied bias. The government believes it's not too high a risk that Lieutenant Branson's presence on the panel would cause the panel's trial to be seen as unfair. Or that most reasonable people in Lieutenant Branson's position, really because of his aspirations, would not be able to render an impartial verdict. Without more, the lower court's opinion should be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. Counsel, we gave the government a bit more time, so you can take 5 minutes for a rebuttal if you need it. If you need it.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, addressing this court has, in the facts of United States versus Downing, the trial defense counsel, again, in that case, physically said the words imply bias. Here we have the words, the perception of fairness, I believe it was, or something to that effect. This court has held that it's not relevant. The fact that the military judge does not actually conduct the analysis on the record or give some indication on the record. This court has refused to infer that he actually performed the correct analysis. I believe the government inadvertently...
That goes to a deference, but doesn't go to outcome, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. It goes to the deference. I believe the government inadvertently left off the first line of the member's answer of the question coming at halfway. Will you waive the testimony, NCIS agents, just like you'll waive the testimony of any other witness that may testify? His initial response, the very first line he says is, well, to be honest with you, that's not quite a black and white answer.
Well, in fairness, you need to read the entire question that was asked because it's not a very good question. It's a compound question. The question that the defense counsel asked the potential juror was a compound question.
Yes, Your Honor. However, the compound question, will you hold their testimony automatically in that regard, or will you read the testimony as you read the testimony of any other witness that may testify? Well, to be honest, that's not a black and white answer. Second line, of course, we all try to be objective when we sit here and we read everything, but then he goes and starts talking about police officers and the language that is highly debated between counsel. Your Honor, appellant argues that this is exactly why the liberal grant mandate exists. There's no per se rule, and obviously it recognizes the fact that police officers per se are not excluded from members' panels. However, we do that because we don't say that they're not excluded. It's just that we analyze every individual member. We apply to totality of the circumstances case. We see the concerns of what that member brings to the table. If this member had simply said, you know what, my father is a law enforcement officer, but I'm now a banker. You know, I talk to him once a week. And, you know, I think I can judge that case. I think there definitely alleviates some of the concerns here. However, just to briefly recap, he said he had a close relationship with his father, who was a police officer. He was rehabilitated. He said his clear goal was to be, a prosecutor. He had put him dead eyes in jail, and he thought it was a continuation of his naval service. He was rehabilitated. He said he would, when comparing a cop to another witness, he said he would cut a little bit more the other way. He was rehabilitated. Finally, he said he had less of a respect for civilian defense counsel. Again, he was rehabilitated. Your Honors, appellant simply proposes the fact that after enough rehabilitation, the public starts to become concerned about the fairness of a court-martial where this member understandably, quite understandably, has bias towards the government, that police officers were called to testify and testify to material facts that influence appellant's court-martial. If there are no other questions, this concludes appellant's argument. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 9:40 a.m.
Court stands in recess until 9:40.